witch said, what?
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Witch Said What podcast. I'm Katie, your host. And today we are covering deities and decisions. Like I said, we're talking deities today, y'all. What they are, what witches do with them, are they necessary, the works. And this will be a two-part series. This first episode will cover what a deity is, choosing and being chosen to work with deities, and then the next episode we'll go into connecting with them, types of offerings. We'll hear a personal story about how a friend of mine got connected with her deity, and I will also touch base on how I personally work with them. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that last month I went on a witchy retreat with some of my friends. We had a really awesome time together. And a lot of what we talked about had to do with deities. One of my friends, Wonder, who used to host Crafting Cast with me, has been working with the Morgan for over a year. And another friend who is into glamour and beauty magic just dedicated to Aphrodite. So I thought that it was a topic worth diving into. But before we tackle all of that, let's get to some announcements. The first one is that my Patreon is up and running with some great rewards, including monthly sigils, an exclusive Discord server, spells out on my own spell book, readings, and so much more. You can join today by going to patreon.com/witchsaidwhat. The second thing is that my YouTube channel is up, and this week I posted my second video. The first one was an introduction about the channel, but this one I actually go into sigil magic and made some sigil art for you guys. So be sure to find me on YouTube and subscribe. And three, I've had some really good blog posts lately. Two so far have been about symbols in tarot and my visit to the Salem Witch Memorial. So you can read all those at witchsaidwhat.com. As always, you can find me on social media with the name Witch Said What, all one word. I appreciate all the follows and the comments that you guys leave for me, and I'm excited to keep talking to you all. So let's go ahead and slide right into our tarot card of the podcast. I pulled the Knight of Cups from the Seventh Sphere Tarot de Marseille deck by Labyrinthos. So just to give you guys an idea of what this card looks like, in the Seventh Sphere deck, the court cards are almost like silhouettes. I really enjoy it. It's gorgeous. But the Knight of Cups is riding a horse, and he carries in his hand a golden goblet / chalice. The horse that he rides is passing water. It's either the ocean or the river. There are some clouds in the distance with some stars, and there are also some moonbeams or sun rays. I can't really tell. I think that it is the moon, though, given that all the stars are out. Anyway, so that's your general description of the card. Keywords are following the heart, idealist, and romanticism. So let's see what Labyrinthos has to say about their design. The Knight of Cups is an artist or poet of sorts, someone of a sensitive nature that acts primarily based on emotions. His depth of feeling can cause moodiness, since he is empathic and is in tune with the feelings of others. With a tendency to romanticize life, he may have trouble reconciling reality with his dreams. His appearance in your cards can represent a little nudge for you to act on whatever feelings you may have. Okay, so the knights in general in the tarot are known as messengers and delivering news. The Knight of Cups in particular can suggest that we are entering a period of strong emotions where affairs of the heart figure in very strongly. The cup he offers is a proposal of some kind, and inside we find something of great value to us. We can't fear taking the cup in hand. Whatever is being offered is sure to bring us great joy, but the knight does ask us to consider the source from which it comes, our joy, the cup itself. And when it comes to working with deities, and aligning ourselves with them, there is a lot to consider. How important will their role be in our lives? How much time can we dedicate? This relationship can be super intense, and it relies a lot on those gut feelings we get. But we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break, so stay tuned. Welcome back. Let's go ahead and start breaking down what a deity is. So, a deity is a supernatural being considered divine or sacred. C. Scott Littleton defines a deity as a being with powers greater than those of ordinary humans, but who interacts with humans positively or negatively in ways that carry humans to new levels of consciousness beyond the grounded preoccupations of ordinary life. Once upon a time, male deities were referred to as gods or patrons, while female deities were referred to as goddesses or matrons. Nowadays, gender classification of the deities really has become less of an issue. Deities are called many, many, many different titles. And religions can be categorized by how many deities they worship. Monotheistic religions accept only one deity, predominantly referred to as capital G-O-D, God. Polytheistic religions accept multiple deities. Henotheistic religions accept one supreme deity without denying other deities, considering them as equivalent aspects of the same divine principle. And non-theistic religions deny any supreme eternal creator deity, but accept a pantheon of deities which live, die, and are reborn just like any other being. As a witch, you do have the choice whether or not you want to work with and or worship with deities or divine beings. There are plenty of witches that choose not to use them in their craft, and defining deities and figuring out what precisely the deities are is something you can only discover through contemplation, meditation, practice, and communion with them. This is one of those moments in any witchcraft class where people would point out that witchcraft and a person's practice and path are as unique as the individual choosing them. Paganism is traditionally polytheistic, and many witches will speak of their patrons, that is, a patron god or a matron goddess. Patrons and matrons, or just patrons when referring to both, are the specific gods and or goddesses a witch honors and works with. There really aren't any rules about patrons. I've known people to have as few as one and as many as four or five. So they are usually of the same pantheon. Not always, though. Mixing pantheons is kind of tricky and shouldn't be taken lightly. And I say this because, like, as you think about it in human history, different cultures have conquered other cultures, especially white culture. So it's really, really important that we take into consideration actual historic facts about the cultures that we study and the pantheons that we are researching. The benefit of establishing relationships with patrons is that it gets fully developed. In your ongoing worship and serving your patron gods, you get to know them intimately. And taking you under their wing, a god or a goddess will teach you a great deal over time, and you can learn many lessons from them. Sometimes you can be with the same patrons for life, and other times you'll be with them for a time, usually a few years, before you reach the end of the road with them, boys to men style. This is not a terrible thing. When a patron cuts you loose, it's not because you've done anything wrong, but because you're ready to move on. This is when you've benefited from the relationship all that you can, and they realize that you're ready for a new patron, a new teacher who can bring you yet to the next level of lessons that need to be learned. Because we all change, right? We all grow, and sometimes what serves us, you know, now will not serve us in 5 years. Having a patron doesn't mean that you need to exclude other gods. In witchcraft, we don't believe that the gods have the whole have no other gods before me policies as found in other religions that you may be familiar with. It's okay to go to a ritual that worships another god or to hold a ritual to a different goddess if you wish for a specific purpose. But I will say that you need to make note that some deities are pretty famous and don't take kindly to sharing their worshipers, right? One of those in particular has been like Hera. She is a powerful, badass bitch, but she does not like to share. When you open yourself up to working with deities, there are several different ways you can discover them and find the right one for you. This is, again, highly individualized, and no two ways work the same for each person. However, most believe that it boils down to two things: being chosen or choosing your deity. A lot of witches will tell you that they didn't choose their gods, but that their gods chose them. Like many religions describe it, it feels like a calling. And being that, it's really hard to explain. Many pagans feel that they get signs of some sort. This may be an image or an animal associated with a certain patron popping up a lot unexpectedly, or dreams, or even visions. And often, these are accompanied by those gut feelings we talked about earlier, that inner voice that we all have. I have a friend who is actually going to be on next week's episode talking about how she got chosen, but just a few details. She works with the Morgan, and I can remember her. We were recording the podcast a couple of years ago, and she kept talking about like this daunting feeling, this like dread that she felt, and how she felt like she was being watched all the time. And for a couple of months, we had really discussed a deity or her wanting to work with a deity. And she was having a really hard time choosing. Well, then these feelings started happening. And of course, my first gut reaction, I'm pretty sure if you go back and listen to a couple of episodes of Crafting Cast, you can hear me be like, what if it's the Morrigan? Like, gut instinct, that is what I thought when she first mentioned those feelings of dread. Not that the Morgan is like terrible and scary. I mean, she is scary, but you know, like it's just the first thought I had. And then she started having really intense dreams. Vultures were everywhere around her, like physically around her, swooping around her house and stuff. So she was pretty much chosen. She put the vibe out, y'all, and was like, I'm ready to work with a deity. And she made herself known. But if you don't feel the calling, you certainly should not feel bad about that. For one thing, maybe you're just too new to witchcraft and not really ready to work with a personal deity yet. And for another thing, maybe you're just missing the signs. Like, some people are not going to get signs like Wonder did, where there's a literal buzzard just swooping around you trying to take your head off, right? So don't get discouraged. The deities aren't rejecting you. And sometimes we just have to wait. You've got to have a little patience. Or you may need to simply employ a little initiative to start seeking deities and approach them to see which ones will have you or have been waiting for you to come to them in your own time. In other words, you don't have to sit around and wait until you feel like they've come to you. You can meet them halfway. And sometimes you'll just know. A deity will reach out and place a hand on your shoulder and be like a Pokemon trainer, like, hey there, human, I choose you. And sometimes it can be the beginning of a lifelong association. In other cases, it may be a brief connection to facilitate a goal of yours or of their design. Sometimes we overthink things, and it can be as straightforward and as simple as choosing a particular deity or pantheon to work with. Like, it's that simple. I do have some suggestions, though, and that would be to pick a set of mythology and deities that resonate with you. There's no point in trying to develop a relationship with a set of gods that you really have no interest in just because they feel appropriately pagan. Like, a lot of people who first get into witchcraft read a lot of New Age books, and they're really directed towards Celtic deities. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why that is like the numero uno pantheon to choose from, but it happens. So I suggest looking for things that inspire you and capture your imagination. Also, don't settle for just the information that appears in those modern New Age books. Unfortunately, New Age authors aren't always the best of scholars and can misinterpret or regurgitate misinterpreted information and even twist it to fit their own agendas. I'd urge you to explore the history of the culture that these deities emerge from and the wider mythology in other sources. A good starting point is always a big table book of mythology, as are the Oxford series, A Very Short Introduction to... particularly if you feel daunted by more academic works. I know that, like, sometimes picking up a college textbook about, you know, pantheons and stuff, you're reading it and you're just like, what does this even mean, right? In the case of the Oxford books, they're written by people familiar with the given subject, and they kind of present it in a really bite-sized and approachable way. There's also academia.edu, which is an awesome community-based website where academics and scholars post articles on a vast array of subjects. Again, they are generally short texts, which are largely accessible. Just don't feel guilty for passing up the more technical pieces, because I sure as hell don't. The aim is to gain a wider grounding in the origins of the context of the chosen deity or pantheon, and this should always be tempered by experiential practice. And as always, I'm going to put a little footnote here for you guys. Be aware of closed cultures and religions. Be aware of initiatory cultures and religions as well here, okay? Cultural appropriation is a topic that I get real heated about. If you don't know what that is, go ahead, pause the podcast, and go ahead and Google cultural appropriation. Okay, thanks. Another suggestion is to not limit yourself to just exploring information on just one pantheon or culture. Like I said before, New Age pagan books sometimes present a very distorted view of ancient deities, like Hecate being a prime example. Reading around can lead you to discover things about deities that you may not have fully appreciated when reading, like, a Witchcraft 101 book. And finally, you don't need to feel locked into a particular deity or pantheon just because it's where you started. Like I said, a lot of people start with those witchcraft, like, New Age 101 books, and they're always pointing people towards, like, Celtic and sometimes Norse mythologies and stuff. But just because you start there doesn't mean that you're going to end up there, and it doesn't mean that you even have to start there to begin with. Your journey is going to evolve, and if something doesn't fit, don't hold on to it because it's not going to hinder your growth. Some people find the right fit straight away, and others don't. One good thing about, you know, becoming familiar with deity energies is that it helps you realize your perfect fit over time. And last suggestion, remember that it's okay to say no. Like, if you feel that a deity is reaching out to you and you start researching them, and you're just like, this is not it for me. If you feel uncomfortable in any way, just say no. At no time do you ever have to accept a deity as your patron. You always have the choice to say no, and thank you, but no, and telling them to go away. I don't want anyone to come away from this podcast thinking that when a god notices them, that they have no choice but to accept that deity, because you do. You do have a choice. This is your journey. This is your path. So that is it for Deities and Decisions, part one. Next week, we're going to continue our deity discussion, hitting on topics about connecting, offerings, a personal story from Wander, and I'll go into my own relationships with the deities I work with. Now, I do have some homework for you guys, okay? Okay. I am going to make a post over on Instagram, which said what? And it'll say, like, deities and decisions. It'll be blasted from the rooftops. If you want to, you can go ahead and include any questions that you all have about deity work. Literally anything you all want to ask. And I will include those questions on the podcast next week. So be sure to comment there. Also, as always, you can find me on social media, which is Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Patreon, YouTube, under Which Said What, all one word. Be sure to leave a review and rate this podcast high and spread the word about the Which Said What podcast, y'all, because I want to continue to share all the joy of witchiness with the world. But yeah, so be sure to do that. Do your homework, guys, for real. Send in your questions or comments, too. I mean, that would be fine, too. I'll read them. If you don't want your username read out loud on the podcast, just be sure to add a note that you want to remain anonymous, okay? Okay. So, have a great weekend, y'all, and I will see you all soon. Bye!